In the battle for Libya, it really does matter which side your country is on.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The interim rulers in Libya today announced a deadline of Saturday for forces loyal to Muammar Gaddafi to surrender or face military force. And now that the Gaddafi regime is likely coming to an end, some countries stand to gain, while others stand to lose. We have a couple of reports this morning. One from Marketplace's Rob Schmitz in Shanghai on how China may face an uphill battle now that the Libyan dictator is gone, a dictator China supported. But first, a report from the tiny Gulf state of Qatar, which supported the rebels and in return hoped for some economic benefit. Here's the BBC's Simon Atkinson.
Qatar sent money, weapons and expensive fighter jets to the Libyan rebels during the uprising. In fact, Qatar's capital Doha has become something of a home away from home for Libyan opposition leaders. Dean is a TV producer working for a Free Libya TV satellite channel that broadcasts out of Doha. She thinks Libyans will always be grateful for Qatar's support.
For different reasons, you know, the Arab world has not been able to step up, but Qatar is, I would say, an exception.
So what does Qatar want in return? Well, clearly now it's going to have some political influence. But there are potential economic benefits too. Qatar-based companies are going to be well positioned to win lucrative construction contracts. And that's because Libya is going to be spending money to rebuild infrastructure battered by airstrikes. The Libyan rebel government's already said it's going to tap their regional allies to help sell their vast oil and gas supplies. In Dubai, I'm the BBC's Simon Atkinson. For Marketplace.
I'm Rob Schmitz in Shanghai. Here are the stakes for China. It's invested $20 billion in Libya. 35,000 Chinese workers were employed there, and 3% of China's imported oil comes from Libya. Now China stands to lose all of this because it placed its bets on the wrong guy. William McCahill is a former senior American diplomat who's now a financial services consultant in Beijing.
Now with Gaddafi ousted, and the rebels having formed a new regime, the Chinese are trying, in a sense, to recapture the commercial interests that they had had. And they're having some difficulty in doing that.
The new Libyan state oil company says China may lose out on future oil contracts. That's because earlier this year, China declined to vote on a UN referendum to help protect Libyan civilians. McCahill says China's booming economy needs that oil. One example? China's adding 14 million cars a year. So any drop in the oil supply threatens Chinese productivity. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. European markets are mixed right now. London shares are much higher, though, by about a couple of percent, but markets elsewhere are down. We're going to get an update a little later this morning on consumer confidence. Some positive consumer spending numbers yesterday sent Wall Street stocks much higher. The Dow slapped on 254 points, about 2.5%, to close at 11,539.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. since 1896. AllianzUSA.com. And by CenturyLink, a new kind of broadband company linking Americans coast to coast with consistently fast speeds and personal service. More at CenturyLink.com. Healthcare coverage is supported in part by the California Endowment, a health foundation dedicated to expanding access to healthcare for all Californians.
We're going to get a glimpse at how home prices in big cities across the country are doing with the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Comes out in just a couple of minutes. For some American families, home dwelling is taking a trip back to the future. New census data show in this tough economy and an even tougher housing market, the number of multi-generational households has surged. Now, those are homes where children, parents and grandparents, three generations or more, all live under one roof. Let's talk a bit about this new trend. Philip Cohen is professor of sociology at the University of North Carolina. He's with us now from Chapel Hill. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Why are more people of different generations living together, and how does this affect them all?
Well, the first thing that happens is that people turn to those they expect to care for them, or people that have some moral obligation. And whether it's young people looking up a generation or old people looking down a generation, the family is the first place that people have to turn.
Is this because of economic conditions? I mean, is that particularly the reason why?
We've seen for a long time that people tend to live in multi-generational households when they don't have as much choice as they'd like. So it seems like Americans, when they can afford to, don't do this. So when we see a strong uptick in multi-generational living, we have to suspect that it's economic, although, frankly, the numbers have been trending up since the middle of the decade.
How does this bode for the rest of the economy, though? I mean, does this mean more sharing of groceries and other toiletry items, less shopping, less spending?
Well, I don't know if it's good or bad, but it may be more efficient for families. They certainly it may reduce the total number of households and increase economies of scale within families. I have seen at least one report that builders are getting more requests for so-called in-law suites in some areas. So there, if you are taking it seriously and you have some money to spend, then it certainly is another opportunity to spend some money.
Very quickly, sir, is this temporary or are these permanent living situations?
Well, the long-term decline in multi-generational living made us think that it would never turn around, and the steep increase in the last few years has us wondering. I don't know.
Philip Cohen, professor of sociology at the University of North Carolina. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
And finally, an Australian man has learned the hard way. Don't store your wife's expensive gold jewelry in garbage bags. See, the man put the items in the bags because he wanted to fool any potential robbers. Well, instead, he fooled himself. And when he threw out the other trash in his house, in the same type bags, of course, he threw the jewelry out with it, about $53,000 worth of jewelry. Now, because the guy didn't realize what he'd done until a couple of days later, garbage collectors say there's no telling where that prized bag wound up. There is good news from the markets these days. Gold is down from its record highs earlier this month, so that's good news for the man. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles, online at marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Ask a platoon of Marines why go green, you're going to get a lot of this.
I mean, come on. Like, seriously, it's not an environmental thing. It's all about trying to help us accomplish the mission.
Guns versus batteries. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tactical trade-offs when troops use green tech. It's next time on Marketplace. We'll have the numbers from Wall Street as well. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.